You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the At The Hive podcast, part of the SB Nation network of podcasts. On today's episode, we talk about the Hornets' devastating losses to the Suns and to the Bulls, them occupying real estate in the heads of the Detroit Pistons, a look ahead to their weak slate of games in this homestand, the NBA's proposed schedule changes and how they are beneficial to the Hornets if they go through with them, and of course who's buzzing and who's wasn't. Let's get started. What's up, guys? Welcome to the At The Hive podcast. It's your hosts, Jonathan and Zach. Zach, how are you doing?
R.I.P. Ron Rivera, Jonathan. We just heard the news.
Yes, Ron Rivera is out as a Panthers head coach after almost 9 years. So that's the big news around Charlotte sports today. But we've got a Hornets podcast to talk about.
Their job. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably time, but it's always sad. Like, I've been like, we need to get rid of Rivera, and then I see that it gets announced today. I'm like, oh, poor guy. I feel bad now.
Do you think, and I'm going to ask you the big question right off the bat on the podcast, do you think Ron Rivera is the only professional sports coach to get fired in Charlotte this year?
Yeah.
Or I should say this season?
Yeah. Borrego's fine.
Okay. All right. You're saving Borrego.
Do you agree with that?
I totally agree. It depends on how many losses pile up and how Jordan, if Jordan is able to say, hey, this is a, I'm going to be measured about this decision. But if I know one thing about Michael Jordan, he doesn't like to lose.
Yeah, I just think the expectations coming into the season were super low. And I think the front office and everybody within the organization knew that. Like Mitch Kupchak was in Australia to scout. And the two people he'd be scouting in Australia are LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton. And both are supposed to be top five picks. So I think that in and of itself shows where the team's expectations are for themselves.
They have an idea that this is going to be a losing season, which we
And the Hornets are doing that losing season thing in spectacular fashion over the last couple weeks.
Are you not entertained?
So we talked about it earlier that the Hornets were due to regress to
and
the
boy,
mean.
Did they regress.
Yeah, and then. And regression doesn't happen like in a short time frame. Like it's not like if you win a close game, you're over. But they were not going to keep winning games at this rate in so many close fashions. But the way they've lost these games lately is spectacular. Like I've said it a couple times on Twitter, I knew the Hornets were going to regress to the mean. I did not think they were going to regress to the mean in this way.
You know, we go around the table at Thanksgiving and we talk about things that we are thankful for. And on top of family and my wife, I added I was thankful for the Detroit Pistons because at least I got a little reprieve from the losses from the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, and the Detroit Pistons are the only two wins that the Hornets have since our last episode, which was 2 weeks ago, since we didn't record Thanksgiving week. Right. So yes, very thankful for the Detroit Pistons and the fact that the Hornets own space in their head and the Pistons cannot close the deal against the Hornets.
I don't know what it is about that, but the losses that we had, although they were spectacularly huge in some circumstances, these are teams that are at the top of the Eastern Conference. We're talking about the Bucks, the Raptors, the Heat. Those were the really big losses. I guess, you know, we lost pretty big to the Wizards, but everyone else, at least we kept competitive.
So
I wanted to ask you, is this the most like consistently inconsistent team to this point that you've ever seen? Like the Hornets, every single good team that they've played has just completely run them off the court. Every single one. Every single team that's not good, the Hornets have played dead even. There's no variation from that over the course of the season.
Yeah, and is that not the description of a bad team? That
it is.
You're competitive with bad teams and you get blown out by good teams.
It is a description of a bad team. But like normally over the course of a season, you see some like oscillation, like a bad team will upset a good team, or they'll get run off the floor by another bad team because it just wasn't their night. But so far this season, through a quarter of the season, it's been if the Hornets play a bad team, they will play close. They won't blow them out. They won't get blown out. It will be a close game down to the wire. And if they play a team that's supposed to be in the playoffs, the game will be over by the middle of the third or the middle of the fourth quarter every single time. And I don't know what that means.
I mean, all right, so big picture, I think that talent in the NBA this year, last year, maybe the past 5 to 10 years have been concentrated on the playoff teams, the teams that have big name players on their teams. And this year, it's kind of coming to a head where, like, even people who are of mediocre talent, I've heard Waiter's name being pushed around as a trade chip going to the Lakers or something like that, simply because anybody who has playoff aspirations, who wants to go deep in the playoffs, they attract any type of talent. So it's not like the Hornets or the Wizards can really be competitive in the trade market, in the buyout market, just because they're looking to go to teams that are already winning and already have champion aspirations.
Yeah, there's like a fine line where like at this point in the season, only the really good teams are getting good players and the bad teams are just kind of getting worse.
Yeah, and you can't attract anybody if you're just going to get worse.
And that's kind of where the Hornets are. So on the two losses that stand out the most to me were the Bulls game last Saturday before last, and then the Suns game on Monday night.
LaVine, the legend.
Because of the, like, I think, so which of the two, to start off, which of the two was the worst loss? Like, which was a more heartbreaking, like, shocking loss to watch for you?
The end of the Bulls game.
Okay.
It reminded me of the game last year when Jeremy Lamb didn't have control of the ball at the last second, finally got it in his hands and did that bank three-pointer to win the game. That's basically exactly what LaVine did this year.
Yeah. So I guess the Hornets were owed one. And I think, and I agree with you, the Bulls game is the worst game. And I think it was like 75%. I put this poll up on Twitter, and like 75% of people said the Bulls. I think if the Suns game happened first, the answer might be the Suns. But since the Bulls game had happened so recently, like, it was kind of expected.
Par for the course, yeah.
Yeah, so here's my story. I was at the Bulls game, and I was doing my typical stuff, but I was doing it on my phone during the game, which I'm wont to do sometimes. So I'm writing the recap, like, on my phone during, like, timeouts and stuff. And when Terry Rozier made a shot to go by, like, 7 or 8, I wrote in the recap that Terry Rozier iced the game with a three-pointer or with free throws or something. I wrote that in the recap, and I was, like, finishing it up, and I was just waiting for the game to end so I could put the final score in. I even started typing, like, the Bulls made some threes to make it interesting, but the Hornets still came out top. And I'm, like, in the process of typing that, and then stuff goes, like, completely hits the fan. I'm like, oh, my God. My brother is sitting next to me, and he looked down at my phone, and he just laughed because he saw what I had typed on my phone. I had to clear out the whole last paragraph and rewrite the whole thing after the game ended.
Yeah, what that says to me, Jonathan, is that it's your fault. When you write something like that before the end of the game, I imagine it's your fault. You put that bad juju out there.
I've done it before, and I always get a little bit nervous when I start doing that because I try to get these done quick because, like, once the game ends, I want to go about my life. So I try to get them, and people have seen this before. I get them up, like, right after the game ends. But I definitely feel like I'm messing with the basketball gods when I start writing, like, final results and stuff when the game's still being played.
And the gods have struck you down with
another aside. I published the Bucks recap before the game ended because I figured the Bucks were going to run out the clock, so I just went ahead and hit publish, and then they took a shot with like 2 seconds left in the game, and I was like, oh no, that better not go in. And it did. So
just behind the curtain.
Yeah. teams never do that when they're up by 40. They don't shoot with 2 seconds left in the game with the shot clock running down. They just take the shot clock violation and let the game end. But what were you about to say?
So I did something that I try not to do in my normal life, and I've read the comments on our last podcast.
Uh-huh.
Specifically, a lot of people were calling us Debbie Downers, Jonathan.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And I want games like the Suns and games like the Bulls game. Those are great games. I am interested in what's going on. They're entertaining. You see some Hornets do things that you see some potential, some future in their game, but they're losses and we need to treat them like losses. And we don't know how to finish games, and that's a problem. So acknowledging that there are problems in the game doesn't mean that, you know, I'm down on the Hornets, or you know, I'm not enjoying doing this podcast or being a part of the Charlotte Hornets journey. But you do have to recognize that this team isn't ready to win yet. There's a lot of potential, and I could see, you know, with a good draft pick this coming year, and you know, hopefully some good decisions with the front office, we could bring in some players that could make this team in the future a good to great team. But right now, you just can't say, you can't ignore reality, you know?
Yeah, and I will say, I want to give credit to our commenters, because in general, they're very good compared to most corners of the internet, where it's just a cesspool of bad opinions and bad people. Our commenters are very good. But I do understand, like, the trepidation about us being Debbie Downers, but I think it'd be unfair, and I've said this before, to put overly high expectations on this team as it is right now, because they're young, and like you said, what we're rooting for right now is signs of hope, signs of promise, and closing out games is a young team problem. Like they're gonna falter in late game execution when the pressure's at its highest, and that's what young teams do, and that's what the Hornets are doing, and there's no shame in that.
Yeah, and you look at, I don't know if you watch the bench when you watch basketball games, but I like to watch the bench, watch their reactions. And this team is invested in the players on the team doing well. When Marvin Williams had that weird and one in the Suns game, you saw the bench react to that. You saw them be really hyped for Marvin Williams. It's great to see that. Even those winning Cavalier teams with LeBron on it, like they were winning 50 games a season, and you wouldn't see them react to the success of their players. And you see when players do well with the Hornets, you see the bench react, and that's what I live for. I like to see that happen.
I do too. I love the bench reactions, especially when it's like not guy, like when it's like unheralded guys, like when Marvin Williams does something, or when Biz does, like when Biz Euro stepped on Monday night and the whole bench was losing their minds, because it's just like these guys all play for each other and they all like playing together. That stuff, that does make it a lot more enjoyable to watch. If they're having fun, we're having fun.
It's easier to see them lose because you see them being invested in each other. Can we talk a little bit about the coming schedule? Can I change up and then we can get I know you want to talk about that kind of stuff, because I wanted to specifically talk a little bit about the Golden State Warriors.
We can switch stuff around. We can go ahead and look ahead to next week.
Cool. I wanted to talk about the Golden State Warriors because they have 4 wins right now, Jonathan.
They're bad. The Golden State Warriors are aggressively bad.
And my question to you is, what happens if they're just bad all year and they have the worst record right now? What if they end the year with the worst record? They get some type of top 3 pick, and you see this Golden State Warriors come back with a healthy Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond, and then this amazing top 3 pick. I feel like it's got a Spurs not playing Robinson to get Tim Duncan kind of atmosphere going on there. And you know, Steve Kerr has got a Spurs history as well. Do you have some conspiracy theory feeling going on with them? Because I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if it's a conspiracy, because I don't think they tore Klay Thompson's ACL or they broke Steph Curry's hand. But I don't think they were terribly upset when Steph Curry was found to be out for pretty much the whole year. I think they're just like, oh no, darn, now we're going to have to be bad. Oh no. Cause now like Draymond Green's getting sat for any sort of ailment they can find on a given night. Like he sat out Monday night because of his heel. D'Angelo Russell's been out a couple times with minor injuries. He might be back for the Hornets game on Wednesday, but, yeah, they're whenever they can find an injury to put on the report, Russell and Draymond go out, and I think they're fully leaning into this idea of being like the blatant top three pick, and they have D'Angelo Russell still too, and on their team or to flip for better for more assets next summer.
Yeah, with that being said, it's crazy to say this, but we have Golden State next. Do you see that as a win?
It should be, but we know it's going to be close, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, sure. I predicted four last time we were on this podcast. I predicted we were going to go on a 4-game winning streak, and that was not a good prediction.
But now you can try to get, because that was with the Wizards, Bulls, Heat, and Pistons, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you could try again because now we have the Warriors, Nets, Hawks, and Wizards all at home. The Warriors are bad. And the Hornets should win. Whether or not they will is another story. The Nets are not bad, but Kyrie Irving's not playing still. They've been good without him, but they don't look as imposing on paper when Kyrie's got to worry about Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, and so, you wonder who matches up with Dinwiddie in that game. Do you put... I mean, the problem with the Hornets is that there's not a defensive answer. And the best defensive answer we've been able to come up with, it's so sad to say, is Bismack Biyombo, who has been playing well.
Yeah. It's just the Hornets, because of the way their roster is constructed right now, they basically start 2 point guards, 2 power forwards, and a center. So guys like Dinwiddie who are in between that, who are like combo guards, are kind of a matchup problem.
Yeah.
Because you either put Rozier, who's too small, or Bridgers, who's probably not quick enough, and then Dinwiddie's just going to have his way. The other team, I want to talk about the Hawks, because the Hawks have had a wild season so far.
Very weird.
They, in consecutive games on Saturday night, so Saturday they gave up 158 points. James Harden scores 60 points in 3 quarters. 2 days later, wait, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say he scored 60 points. His career high is 61, and they didn't play him in the fourth quarter for 1 minute for him to jack up a three to get his.
He was mad about it too.
Career high, yeah.
He saw it on the scoreboard and he got mad. But 2 days later, they play an obviously lesser team in the Warriors, but they allow 79 points. They have 158 points and then 79 points in back-to-back games against NBA basketball teams. I don't know if a team has had a wider range of outcomes over a 2-game span in the history of the NBA.
And before that Rockets loss, they had just lost the past 10 games. It's not been a good season for Atlanta. And you see them coming up on the schedule, and I'm tempted to say that that's our W. In the next four games, they're going to go 1-3. And we're going to beat Atlanta.
It's going to be the Hawks.
Yeah.
Well, the other game after that's the Wizards. The Wizards have also
just beat us.
Yeah, they did. They also just gave up 150 points to the Clippers. I don't know what it is. So the Hornets are playing back-to-back games on, I think it's what, Sunday and Tuesday? But they're playing back-to-back games against the Hawks and the Wizards against two teams that have both given up 150 points in regulation to the Clippers. Talk about a fun stat.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, the Clippers are the best team in the NBA, the second best team in the NBA.
Yeah, they're up there.
Yeah, they're having a great season, and it's, you know, we lost, what did we give up, 140-ish to the Raptors?
132 to the Raptors, I think.
Yeah, 132.
132 to the Raptors and 137 to the Bucks on Saturday.
Yeah, so as we've discussed, the defense isn't the best either. So, and we just lost to Washington last week. So I can only predict going forward what I've seen in the past. And besides Atlanta, I mean, I know Brooklyn has no Kyrie, but that could be a plus just because Kyrie has problems being a teammate.
He's a locker room cancer.
Yeah. And I could see Golden State not wanting to lose to the Hornets twice in a season.
So you go in that they're going to go, you think the Hornets are going to go 1-3 over the next four?
Yes. You got something better for me?
I'm going to say 2-2. I think they lose to the Nets just because the Nets are starting to figure it out. And then I think they'll get one of the three against the Warriors, Falcons, Warriors, Hawks, and Wizards. Speaking of that, though, on Sunday we got a good old Charlotte versus Atlanta doubleheader. I don't know if you noticed that.
What do you mean? Oh, the Falcons?
The Falcons. Yeah, the Panthers play the Falcons at 1, and then pretty much right after that game ends, the Hornets play the Hawks at 5. So that's an interesting day of sports.
Yeah, and they losing in the third quarter, giving things up in the third and fourth quarter. It's just, you know, it's a harder to see the Panthers lose in that fashion simply because I expect more of the Panthers. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's been a hard season in both professional sports for Charlotte fans.
Oh, and for Atlanta fans. So it's a good old time of wallowing in self-pity between Charlotte and Atlanta on Sunday. So I think that'll be interesting to see how that goes. So I say 2-2. You say 1-3 for the next four games?
Yes, yes. And just to remind everybody, I said they were going to go 4-0 last time. So I'm not Debbie Downer all the time.
So you're trying to balance out all the losses you got in that one.
It's a yin and yang kind of thing. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to do Buzzin' and Wasn't and talk about some NBA schedule changes that might be on the horizon.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the At the Hive podcast. We've got who's buzzing and who's wasn't coming up. But first, I want to talk about the NBA's proposed massive schedule overhaul. It'd be hugely beneficial to the Hornets. So for those of you who don't know, I'm going to run through real quick. The first thing, the conference finals would be reseeded. So the top team left would play the worst team that's left, and the second and third teams would play, regardless of conference, which I think is an answer to the Warriors and Rockets playing when they're the two best teams. Couple years ago with the winner going on to just sweep the Cavs, and that was the Warriors, obviously. That probably doesn't affect the Hornets in any way in the near future. What things do affect the Hornets is the play-in round for the playoffs. So it'd be the 7, 8, 9, and 10 team. 7 through 10 would all have a chance to make the playoffs. 7 plays 8, 9 plays 10. The winner of 7 and 8 gets the 7 seed. The winner of 9 versus 10 plays the loser of 7 versus 8. The winner of that game gets the 8 seed. That helps the Hornets. That would have definitely helped the Hornets in recent years. So that rule comes a few years too late, but we'll get to that. And the other thing is a midseason tournament where regional games in the opening month of the season, those games would count towards the regular season record, but they would also function as a sort of pool play. The 6 division winners and 2 wild cards make an 8-team tournament. Single elimination happens around this time of year. Winner gets, I don't know what yet, money. Maybe a draft pick. I don't know how it will work, but I think it'd be fun. Zach, do you have any general thoughts on these proposed rule changes?
What if I just said no? And there was just no nothing for the podcast. That'd be horrible, wasn't it?
I can talk about it a lot. I have a lot of opinions on it, but I don't want to monopolize this show.
Yeah, no. All right, so just some general feelings about it. I like that the NBA is creative and they're mm-hmm. always trying to find ways to re-engage their audience. There's some idea. I mean, you can look at the ratings. Regular season games really don't get any ratings.
Yeah.
As far as the Hornets go, the play-in games for the 7 through 10, mm-hmm. 8 through 10, 8 through 10.
7 through 10.
Yeah, would be great for the Hornets because if we're good, we're always kind of in that area, and we're in that area right now. But what I want to talk about is the idea of reseeding the conferences. Mm-hmm. If you reseed it, then what that means, if I'm understanding it correctly, is that they're just taking the best teams from both conferences, which means that we used to get the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference with a way worse record than the 8th seed in the Western Conference. So we will no longer be the 7th, 8th, and 9th, 10th seeds. Am I understanding that right?
No, it'd only be for the conference finals, because I don't think there's no way that the Eastern Conference owners would allow the league to go to a
Western Conference teams.
Yeah, because the Eastern Conference teams owners like that they can make play 3-4.
Right.
But so what would happen is the conference finals, when you get down to the last four teams, those would get reseeded, regardless of the conferences. So the playoffs before the conference finals would go on as normal. And then so like the reason they want to do it most likely is because I think it was 2018 when the Warriors and the Rockets had that big showdown in the Western Conference Finals. And then the Cavs made the finals as like the 5 seed in the East. What happened was basically everybody's like, all right, the Warriors and Rockets, this is for the finals, because whoever wins this series is just going to blow the Cavs out of the water. And that completely killed like the build up to the finals and made the finals bad.
Right.
So the NBA wants to not have that happen again. So in that situation, the Warriors would play like, I think it was the Celtics that year, and then the Rockets would play the Cavs. Both of them would just run through those teams no problem. And then we'd have the Rockets finals, and we have the two best teams playing for the championship, and that's what the league wants. And I understand why they'd want that, because that makes the finals better viewing, and that's when they should be at their best.
Sure, and the knockout playoff round in the middle of the season, I think, is a great idea. I think it brings kind of a March Madness feel to the mm-hmm. regular season, and I think Bill Simmons has been talking about something like this for the past few years.
Yeah, and I think the pushback, I don't know why you'd push back against it other than you just don't want change, because it doesn't really affect your viewing experience as a fan other than to be like, oh, this is a fun thing. So it's kind of an idea from soccer over in Europe. So like in England, for example, they have the Premier League season that goes on throughout the year, but they also have two cups that go on in the middle of the season that run concurrently with the Premier League season. And the big clubs don't care about it that much. And when you win them, like it's not nearly as big a deal as winning the actual like Premier League title, but it's still a trophy, you know, like it's still an accomplishment of some sort. And for teams like the Hornets, or teams that aren't exactly competing for titles right now, I think it's a good thing to give them something that they can win, you know? Like, if wouldn't it be better this season to come away saying, we went like 20-62, but we won the midseason tournament, that was pretty cool. You know what I mean?
I do. It gives teams reasons not to DNP players too, which I think mm-hmm. is a great thing. And also, it'll take a while before we care about whoever wins that tournament, but eventually mm-hmm. we will care about it. It'll take a few years for people to care about it, but I think it gives you another reason to watch regular season games, which is what the NBA wants, and I want it as well, because I like to talk to people about the NBA.
Wouldn't you be more inclined to watch a game on a random Saturday in December if it was like the whatever they call it championship game, as opposed to if it was just like game 27 of the regular season?
Yeah.
Like I definitely would make more of an effort to watch it. And so Woj and Zach Lowe talked about it on the Woj pod. The NBA seems aware that this won't be like a rousing success right away. Like you said, it'll take a while, because once it becomes a tradition, so to speak, then people start to care about it more. But at first, people always kind of are lukewarm at best about these things, because people don't like change.
Do you have an idea for what they should call the cup, for what they should call the tournament?
I don't know. They'll probably have a sponsor, which always kind of adds to it.
The Kia.
The Kia NBA Cup or whatever, something like that. But yeah, it's something like that. I think it'd be fun. You know, get a trophy to put in the arena. Just something. I think it'd be – it just – it breaks the monotony of the regular season, which I don't understand how that's anything but good. You might not find it super exciting, but I can't see how it's a downgrade from a regular run-of-the-mill regular season game.
It isn't, and I think that people, like you said, who argue against it, just this is the way we've always done it. I don't want things to change, you know?
Yeah, plus the other upside of that is you'll probably get teams from the East and the West playing against each other, and that's fun just because it doesn't happen that often. You know what? They play interconference matchups twice a year, and you might get like a third game between the like Mavericks and the Celtics or something, which is just like, oh, this is different. We don't see this very often. So I think
it'll be fun to see them interact. And like you said, have a different change of pace with that rule change.
So I think it's good for the Hornets. The Hornets have a thing they can actually like rule in, and then the play-in games as they get better will help. They would have definitely helped the last couple of years where the Hornets are bad all season and then they finish strong and then finish the 9 seed. I'm pretty sure they could have made the playoffs if they had a chance to play like the Pistons last year. Well, we know they would have beat the Pistons last year.
Yeah, as long as, and I believe this is what they're thinking about too, as long as it doesn't add games. It shouldn't add games to the playoffs.
No.
It shouldn't add games to the regular season. You should take it away from the regular season and incorporate it into the, I guess they're talking about 78 games.
Yeah, it'd be 78. Games. Yeah, so the only, you'd probably play less than 82 games. The only way you play more is if you make it to the finals of the in-season tournament, and then you're either you either lose the 8-7-8 game or you win the 9-10 game. So if you do both of those things, you could play 83 games, but that's highly unlikely to happen for the same team.
All right, so these proposed rule changes have to be approved by the league's board of governors.
Yeah.
If I gave you one rule change, so of these proposed rule changes, I said one of them is going to pass, and you had to choose one. Which would it be?
If I am an unbiased person, I would probably say the reseeding of the conference finals.
Sure.
As a Hornets fan, I would probably say the in-season tournament.
See, I'm going to take the in-season tournament just because I think, even as an unbiased person, because I think more teams are affected by the in-season tournament versus the reseeding on the conference final.
Yeah, level. I think the reseeding has the biggest effect on ratings, which is, I think, why the NBA, that's probably the most likely to get approved. But from my perspective, as someone who loves just watching the NBA regardless, the in-season tournament is the most appealing to me personally.
Yeah, and your example of the Warriors going and defeating Cleveland 4, there's also an example of them playing the Rockets, defeating the Rockets, but getting spent in that series, and then losing to the Cavaliers. So both examples are possible.
Yeah, it's just, and then you end up with not the most compelling matchup for the finals, and that's not how the season should end.
I agree.
So moving on, we've got who's buzzing and who's wasn't to wrap up the show. I've got one of each.
So do I.
Who is your buzzing?
I mean, we have to say this person because he's getting playing time. He's scoring, which we've rarely seen in his career. And he's doing what he really should be doing, which is rebounding the ball. Mr. Bismack Biyombo.
That is the correct answer.
Was that your buzzing as well?
I don't think there's anybody else. I think it'd be a disservice to talk about anybody else in this section because of how well he's played.
Yeah, and you know, we give him, there's a lot of things you can talk about negatives in his game, and when he's doing what he's made to do, when he's doing what he got paid to do, which is rebound the ball, show some presence in the paint on defense, he's serviceable on a team that doesn't have any playoff aspirations, which sounds like an underhanded compliment, but it's a compliment to Biyombo. He's able to be out there and do things, and he's been doing that for the past week.
So I wrote about him yesterday on At the Hive about him. First of all, the fact that he's playing so well is a testament to him, because you don't just like wake up one morning and get that much better at basketball. It's also a testament to this coaching staff, because I don't think it's a coincidence that he was basically the same player from years 3 through 8 of his career. And then he gets his first full off season with this staff, and he's suddenly like a really, like a, not really good, but like a very serviceable, competent center. Like, I don't think that's a coincidence. And the how much better he's been like across the board Like, I think that's a testament to the coaching staff and how they develop players. I have some stats.
I do.
For Biz.
I think it's a testament to Biyombo as well. What you got?
So this season, he's averaging 17 points per 36 minutes. Do you know what his previous career high was?
I'm going to say 13.
11. 11.3 points per game.
You know, I was going for 11. Wow.
So he's up by almost 6 points per game over, or 6 points per 36 minutes over his career, previous career best. He's doing that with the highest usage of his career. His usage rate this season is 19%. The previous highest of his career was about 15. So that's a pretty significant bump. Despite that, he's shooting the second best percentage from the field for his career. He's straight of his career and the lowest turnover rate of his career. So he's shooting more efficiently, he's turning the ball over less, and he's making better decisions with the ball. Like, across the board better. Like, that's amazing for somebody who's in his ninth season to just have that sudden improvement like that.
And you see it in his play as well. And mm-hmm. and it's weird to think of Bismack Biyombo as the veteran leader on a team, or the mm-hmm. You see the team react to, hey, he's our quote unquote defensive stalwart. He's the guy that we can count on to get the rebound, and he's been scoring too. It's just when you're at the bottom of the barrel, when you're looking for something, it's great that you can find somebody like Bismack Biyombo.
And he can catch now. Like, he's done so many things this season.
Yeah.
He's not fumbled the ball away nearly as often as he has in years past. And he's making tough catches too. Like, they're throwing him passes in traffic and bounce passes and no look passes and like transition bounce passes. And he's just catching and finishing all of them. I've never seen him steal a ball like on the perimeter before, and he's done it twice this year and dribbled in for dunks. I've never seen him do that before. He's done it twice already this year. I don't know what's gotten into him, but it's fun because he seems like the most likable person on the planet.
I mean, yeah, one of the things that may have gotten into him is that it's contract year.
And that doesn't hurt.
I bet he would like somebody somewhere to give him a contract.
It also helps for the Hornets if they try to trade him at the deadline, because now it looks like he can actually be like a helpful piece for somebody as opposed to just an expiring contract.
Yeah. One of these days going forward, we're going to talk about potential trade pieces, and his name has got to come up somewhere.
All right. So who is your wasn't?
So, and again, I may be going with an obvious wasn't, and I don't know what yours is, but mm-hmm. we may have the same one. Mm-hmm. It's MKG.
Oh, it's no, just, it wasn't mine.
Okay. I'm good, and I say it's obvious because he gets DNPs all the time. There's no minutes for this guy. Our colleague Andrew Waters wrote this interesting article about him needing a new team to maybe change his fortune in the NBA. And we've seen people have success outside of the Hornets, and maybe it was the Hornets situation that made them not have success. I don't think it is the Hornets, man. I don't think MKG is an NBA player, and I don't think you can have him on a 2019 NBA team, period. That sounds really harsh coming out of my mouth, but it seems to be the case. The defense that he brought 4 years ago, we're not seeing, and he's not getting the minutes, and that's my wasn't. I know it sounds obvious, but that's, you know. Is that? Am I looking at it the wrong way? Can you give me the other side of the coin?
No, I just think it's an interesting situation because he's not even getting into the game in garbage time.
They're not putting him out there at all.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on there. It's an odd situation. I don't know. I feel like he's going to be on a team next year, I think, if he wants to be, because there's even questions about how much he even wants to play basketball, it seems like. He'll be on a team next year, I think, but I don't know what his role would be, because he's just kind of like an okay defensive guy with an okay motor, when his defense and motor were the only things that kept him on the court before.
I would love to see, or maybe I should write the article about like his transition between college, what the hopes of his potential were, mm-hmm. and you know him coming up with, you know, we're tanking for Anthony Davis, we get MKG instead. I was really hopeful about MKG when he first came mm-hmm. on the team, and it just never came to fruition. I'd love to get his side of the story as well, and see where he thinks he's at in his career.
Kind of like re-scout him as a college prospect and see like what, you know, what kind of potential you see in the kid version of him.
Yeah.
Like without considering what he's become, like without using the benefit of hindsight. Yeah. That'd be an interesting, an interesting take. My wasn't hurtful to me because I'm such a big fan of him personally. But it's Miles Bridges. And it's not anything he's done obviously wrong on the court. He's had a couple games where he's not there, and it's just like everything he's doing is wrong. And it's not so much his fault where he just can't catch a break or he's just having an off night. But his on-off numbers this year are legitimately among the worst in the league. So do you know what Cleaning the Glass is, the website?
Yes, I know the website. Yeah, I was like, it's rebounding? No, I'm just joking.
No. So they do all these stats, and they eliminate garbage time and like last possessions of quarter heaves and stuff. So it's like regular possessions of basketball. Miles Bridges, his on-off differential, so the team's net rating when he's on the court is 22 points per 100 possessions worse than when he's on the court. That is in the first percentile, as in 99% of players in the NBA have a better on-off net rating. It's not good.
Yeah, so, and you're saying that you're coming to the conclusion that the team is better with him off the court than it is on the court based on those stats.
They have been better with him off the court than on the court. Now, I don't know how much of that is. I mean, obviously, it has something to do with Miles Bridges. It's not that, like, it's not entirely a coincidence. I think there's an element that when he is on the court, he's generally, like, starting with a lot of young players. And when he gets subbed out, it's for guys like Marvin Williams and Nick Batum, who at this point in their careers are much better at making their team better than Miles Bridges is. So I don't think that's
you
an indictment on
the Nick Batum compliment in there, didn't you?
somebody has to. to fight the good fight, and as much as everybody hates him, that he's like actually a useful player. He's in the 90th percentile with a plus 12.6 on off differential. Anyway, so I don't think it's so to speak, but it is a little concerning that the team has been so much better without him on the floor. Like, it's not exactly what you want to see from a guy who's shown like good skills and good talent. Like, it makes you wonder what he's doing wrong and what he needs to do to get better.
Agreed. It's year two. I you know, the experiment isn't done yet.
No.
I think he's got some evolution left in his outside shot that he could get better at, and we could see an evolution there. And the idea of him and PJ playing together, figuring out the right combo of those two, that's the future of the Hornets, so that's very important for the Hornets to figure out.
Yeah.
I understand why you put him in. It wasn't especially the past few games, but I could see him figuring it out in the next 2 weeks. I could see him being a buzzing candidate in the next 2 weeks.
He's been a buzzing candidate already this season, but it was just something that I stumbled upon, and it was something that made me sad when I saw it. It's got a big blue one next to his differential, which is like it might be the worst on off differential in the league. So get that fixed, Miles. And for what it's worth, Cody Martin and Devontae Graham are both in the 99th percentile, but they're on off differential. So yeah. Devontae Graham, because everybody loves Devontae. But anyway, that's all the time we got for today. Thanks everybody for listening. Subscribe to us on all your favorite podcast platforms, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
R.I.P. Ron Rivera.
See you guys.